Staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a safe and happy holiday season.
Staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a fun-filled Kwanzaa and a happy new year.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
We're being confronted by approaching omnicides, climate disruption, nuclear war, massive pandemics, mass spread of poverty, and elected dictatorships. And it's in the hands of the people, as it always has been throughout history. Whenever they have achieved justice and they ask, how did this happen? It starts with one or two people conversing with each other and moving to larger numbers of stalwart civic advocates.
That's Ralph Nader, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Ralph Nader. It's in the hands of the people. What's going on in the United States? People are asking that question not only in this country, but around the world. Ralph Nader says, the twin swelling heads of empire and oligarchy are driving our country into an ever-deepening corporate state, wholly incompatible with democracy and the rule of law. America, Nader says, was not designed for kings and their runaway military pursuits. The media rolls over and fails to hold officials accountable. Historically, it's always been citizens overcoming differences, finding common ground, coming together, and making progressive change. It can happen. As Nader says, it's in the hands of the people. Our guest today is Ralph Nader, the son of Lebanese immigrants. He grew up in Connecticut. He's a legendary figure who has spent a lifetime fighting on behalf of ordinary people. The Atlantic named him one of the 100 most influential figures in U.S. history. At 90, he's as active as ever. I talked with Ralph Nader in mid-December. Well, Ralph, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the Middle East now. In Syria, the dramatic toppling of the Assad government after almost 53 years of that political dynasty in about 12 days. Unbeknownst to most Americans, the U.S. has troops in Syria. Israel has greeted events in that country with a massive air attack, invasion, and more seizure of Syrian land. I say more because Israel seized and subsequently annexed the Golan Heights, which it captured from Syria in 1967, a blatant violation of the UN Charter. Where do you see things going in Syria? I know it's the early stages of a new government there.
Well, it's clear the Israelis want a fractured Syria, just like Hillary Clinton, the butcher of Libya, and got Obama to topple Gaddafi, who was disarming and cutting deals with the oil companies. And now Libya is fractured with militias and in a horrible, chaotic, violent state. And that's what the Israelis want, and that's why they're bombing all these weapons areas, as well as, by the way, civilian infrastructure, so that whatever central government is established by the rebels, they can't control the country. The U.S. government is a co-combatant with the Netanyahu terror state, a rogue state that thinks they can bomb anywhere, kill anybody in the Middle East, blow up hospitals, mosques, schools, marketplaces, clinics, ambulances, water mains, electricity, starve people in Gaza, all in violation of all kinds of international law, Geneva Conventions, the UN Charter, and six federal laws that condition shipments of U.S. weapons to foreign countries on good behavior, like observing human rights and not obstructing U.S. humanitarian aid into the area, Those are two federal laws that Biden is violating in favor of Netanyahu, who he cannot seem to say no to, and keep shoveling billions of taxpayer dollars over there to kill more Palestinians. Biden is a real war criminal. He is a recidivist war criminal. He knows he's violating the laws, along with Blinken, the Secretary of State, and he continues to do so. He is lowballing the casualties over there. American doctors back from Gaza reported almost everybody in Gaza, if they're not dead or dying, they're sick and injured. The air pollution alone from the explosions, heavy metals, can hardly breathe when they blow up these apartment buildings. They blow up cemeteries. They blow up anything that stands and go after anybody who moves. This is a rogue terrorist regime. It should be called the Netanyahu genocidal terror regime, committing war crimes by the hour with total impunity. And Biden even attacks the World Court and the International Criminal Court on behalf of his master, Netanyahu. That's why people in this country are starting to call Biden and Blinken, BB Biden and BB Blinken, violators of the U.S. legal system, violators of international law that we participated in establishing, the Geneva Conventions, the Nuremberg Rules, and the UN Charter.
Their selective use of international law by Washington. The U.S. makes a lot of noise about its support for the rules-based international order, but there are double standards. For example, last year, 125,000 Armenians were ethnically cleansed from their millennial-old land of Nagorno-Karabakh, known as Artsakh in Armenian. This was done by Azerbaijan, supported by Turkey and Israel. It was barely covered in the media, and Biden and Blinken, the BBs, as you call them, said nothing.
Yeah, it was hardly covered by the media. There's a lot of murky alliances that Israel has developed with very autocratic regimes. Now they want to cut deals with other dictators in the area that also want to profit from Israeli technology and trade. It's a chaotic area, but I think what history is going to show, David, is that Netanyahu and Biden are banking a lot of revenge that's going to come in the form of blowback against Israel and the U.S. Already, the Defense Department, CIA, and NSA are studying scenarios of blowback. That's their word. You know, it's like 9/11 blowback. And you just can't wipe out hundreds of extended families, babies, children, mothers, fathers, grandchildren, grandparents. You can't wipe out people. You can't arrest them, throw them in Israeli jails and torture them. Those are hostages, too. Entire people of Gaza are hostages, for that matter. They're been long imprisoned with fences, embargoes, and sieges by the Israeli regime for years, controlling everything, exit and entry. You can't think that that is not going to produce any retaliation. Put the shoe on the other foot, just the way the debater, the Palestinian novelist, did at the Oxford Union. She said, what if all this was happening to Israel by some external power instead of happening to the Palestinians? You don't think there'd be any retaliation? What if it was happening to the U.S., some giant power treating Americans the way Palestinians are treated by Israel, backed to the hilt by U.S. power? You don't think there'd be any retaliation from Texas or from Ohio? So we're living in a dream world here of futuristic impunity. It's not going to continue. And so these politicians are banking a lot of revenge against a lot of innocent casualties in the future. And we should always think of that when we decide to what extent we're going to be active in controlling our 535 members of Congress and the executive branch on foreign policy and the perpetuation of a vicious empire that thinks that they can send troops and war and drones anywhere with impunity.
On December 5th, Amnesty International determined that, quote, Israel committed and is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. This report, the New York Times buried on page 8, you can imagine if Amnesty had issued a similar report on Russia or Iran, what the coverage would be like.
A day later, David, a prominent Israeli historian, Lee Mordechai, issued a 170-page report of war crimes of Israel in Gaza and the West Bank, including video clips that are almost too horrific to view, like a group of Israeli soldiers urging a dog, calling out, doggy, doggy, that was eating the corpse of a child under the rubble. And after the dog finished eating, they danced, these soldiers danced and sang Israeli songs. This report by Lee Mordechai, who taught for a year at Princeton, got no coverage in the New York Times and Washington Post, but it's on Haaretz's website. Haaretz gave it prominent coverage, the progressive, fearless newspaper in Israel that Netanyahu is now threatening to sanction. The major documentation of Netanyahu's war crimes are going to start coming from Israelis themselves. You have 16 Israeli human rights groups, very courageous, led by Beth Salem, of course, the ACLU of Israel, but much more courageous than the ACLU, which is kept fairly quiet on the genocide in Palestine. You have refuseniks, you have breaking the silence. Those are veterans, Israeli war veterans, who are standing tall. You have rabbis for human rights. You have the Israeli press, some television networks. All this is going to be documented, but it's pretty late. And for over a year, the Netanyahu censorship of Israeli media has kept most Israelis from seeing what's going on, the death and destruction, genocide, dismemberment, mutilation, starvation, only a few miles away in Gaza in the West Bank. And, of course, Biden, Bibi Biden, has gone along with Netanyahu's prohibition of U.S. journalists going to Gaza as war correspondents, independently reporting back to the American people and the taxpayer what's going on over there. And he's been asked repeatedly by 64 House Democrats, for example, led by Congressman Jim McGovern a month or so ago, to demand that Netanyahu allow U.S. reporters in, and for that matter, Israeli and other foreign nation reporters who are also banned from independent reporting. Biden won't even do that. Biden has been asked by doctors to support airlifting horribly burned infants and children who have been amputated to U.S. hospitals that are ready and able to take them for specialized treatment. He won't even do that. He doesn't even listen to his wife. In December, Dr. Jill Biden saw some mutilated slaughter satellite pictures, and she said to him, stop it now, Joe. And the source for that, by the way, is Joe Biden himself. And he didn't do it. He's a coward. He is a war criminal by any definition of international law. He has turned the USA into a co-belligerent, not just complicity, but technically a co-belligerent with the Israeli military genocide in Palestine, and now trying to fracture any kind of unified Syrian government replacing the Assad dictatorship. It's not just genocide anymore. It seems to move into the ultimate solution, which is omnicide. They want to either kill all the Palestinians, and there have been some Israeli leaders who basically said that over the years, or they want to force them out into the desert in Jordan and Egypt and take over the entire Palestinian territory. There's a big record of that, the hatred and the expulsion impulses of Israeli prime ministers going back to the late 1940s here that Noam Chomsky and others have documented. So what we're seeing here is overwhelming documentation, overwhelming opposition to the rule of international law by Netanyahu and his toady, Joe Biden, who it's almost embarrassing, humiliating to the U.S. and to the American people. Netanyahu is told there's an arrest warrant for him, and he lashes back at the court in The Hague, calling it anti-Semitic. And within a few hours, Biden issues a statement lashing back at the court, and he did it when the court came out, the world court came out with a plausible case of genocide months ago. It's like he's a diddlehead for Netanyahu. Privately, he doesn't like Netanyahu. Privately, in the White House, he says to his associates, Netanyahu is a chronic liar, that Netanyahu has lied to him. But he doesn't have the political courage to stand tall before the American people and the American national interest and say to Netanyahu, no more weapons. You're going to do peace negotiations. You're going to do reparations. Stop the killing. Let the thousands of trucks in with food, medicine, water that the taxpayer in America is paying for. And no more weapons. You understand that, Netanyahu? And no more vetoes on the National Security Council at the UN either, on the UN Security Council. That'll get Netanyahu's attention.
Al Jazeera is banned totally from Israel. Its reporting from Gaza has been truly extraordinary and courageous. You know, there was a photograph recently circulating of Biden in Nantucket coming out of a bookstore holding Rashid Khalidi's book, The 100 Years War on Palestine. I wonder if he's actually going to read the book. It's a little bit late for him to be catching up on history.
It is very late. There's one thing he can do is recognize the Palestinian state, which Obama was asked to do in his last days in office and didn't. That would give the Palestinians a more international stature under international law. And Biden's being asked to do that. Biden knows that Netanyahu has killed about 200 journalists. They've targeted them, often killing them and their families on certain apartment floors that they blew up in Gaza. They've killed over 300 UN staff for UNRWA, the longtime relief organization for Palestinian refugees who've been driven from their home after 1948. Education, health care, food for these displaced Palestinians. And Israel has declared this UNRWA group as a terrorist organization. They've blown up all kinds of UNRWA facilities, schools and feeding centers in Gaza, and killed a lot of their staff, as I mentioned. And the question is, why is Israel still allowed to be a member of the United Nations? Do you know any other country in the world that can kill hundreds of UN staff, declare UN agencies terrorist organization, and even attack UN peacekeepers in southern Lebanon and still be a member of the United Nations because of the protection of the U.S.? The U.S. is the patron. The U.S. is Israel's veto on the Security Council. Hundreds of vetoes over the last 70 years.
Talk about the power and influence of the pro-Israel lobby. And it's not just AIPAC. There are other groups as well. What accounts for it? Is it just money?
It's money and a nonstop messianic support for whatever the Israeli government does, regardless of what political parties control it. It can be called the Israeli government can do no wrong lobbies. But it's not just them. The military-industrial complex, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, others, they make billions of dollars from the militarization of the Middle East and the weapons shipments to Israel. So they love what AIPAC is doing. AIPAC, I think, has reached its peak in Congress. There are already cracks. You have 64 members have defied AIPAC and demanded U.S. journalists. 12 senators on December 5th, led by Senator Schatz from Hawaii, have signed a letter to Blinken demanding entry of U.S. journalists. Congressional Record now is featuring material critical of Israel. None of that was ever possible under the almost total dominance of Congress by the AIPAC lobby. And AIPAC ought to be asked publicly, are you opposed to U.S. journalists going to Gaza and reporting independently? Are you opposed to airlifting horribly burned infants for treatment, horribly amputated children in Palestine for treatment in U.S. hospitals like Shriner hospitals? You got to ask AIPAC these kinds of questions, which will either elicit a no or no comment. If no comment, it's really a yes. There's a lot more attention has to be paid to these lobbies by the media. Have you seen a lengthy investigation of AIPAC's influence in Congress by the New York Times, Post, or Wall Street Journal in the last year? No, not at all.
Well, there has been, as you say, a bit of a breakthrough on blanket support for Israel on Capitol Hill. On November 20th, 19 Democratic senators, led by Bernie Sanders, voted against sending more weapons to Israel. And younger generation American Jews and organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now and other organizations are speaking up against the policies of the Israeli government.
That's right. There's a big gap between the pro-Netanyahu Congress and Bibi Biden and American public opinion. The majority of people want a ceasefire. They want humanitarian aid. They want cut shipments, arms shipments, offensive arms shipments. That never happened before. And it's growing. There's an argument to be made that enough young people, African Americans, and of course Arab Americans and Muslim Americans, staying home on November 5th cost Harris the election. 7 million Democratic voters stayed home. That's the answer right there to Trump's victory. You can't have 7 million voters less than turned out in 2020 for Biden. 7 million less Biden voters stayed home. And that's the election right there, even though it came down very narrowly to only 230,000 votes in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. That was a margin of victory by Donald J. Trump, the convicted felon, the chronic liar, and the politician who says to Netanyahu, finish them off. You know what that means, against the Palestinians.
You're echoing what Peter Beinart, the author and CUNY professor, wrote in the Times op-ed that the Gaza cost the Democrats the election.
And the damage to our country's democracy intensifies because of the Israeli juggernaut. Suppression of civil liberties that you've reported, suppression of free speech on college campuses, people losing their jobs because they put something on their website, compassionate for the Palestinian victims, law firms not wanting to hire young law student graduates like Sullivan and Cromwell, stating that that would be a disqualification of hiring law school graduates. We sent an objection to Sullivan Cromwell in New York City, and the culpable partner has declined to respond. And then, of course, there's the influence in Congress, distorting the Congress into a criminal aider and abettor of a genocide over there, and prior Israeli attacks as well that killed hundreds and hundreds of children, not to mention civilian adults, who just wanted to get through the day with their families and weren't part of any military opposition. And what they're doing to the executive branch, the State Department, the degrading of the Foreign Service, and what they're doing to the military budget and expanding it in an unaudited fashion, which is a violation of federal law itself. The Department of Defense, the only department that does not provide an audited budget every year to the U.S. Congress. That's a violation of a federal statute that began in 1992. So it's what's happening to our own democracy, apart from any blowback, that should make all Americans very, very engaged, even the ones that don't care what's going on over there. Just consider what's coming up, what's going on here, all the impoverished areas that could use that money that's being shipped with unconditional hoopla by the Congress to Israeli terrorist regime.
Raz Segal, the Israeli-American Rutgers professor, he apparently lost the job that he was up for at the University of Minnesota because he was a critic of U.S.-Israeli policy. Students have been suspended for speaking out. There's been a real clampdown on free speech on campuses across the country.
Yes, and they don't get suspended for supporting Netanyahu. They don't get suspended for supporting arms shipments. They don't lose their jobs in the faculty. It's just very, very obvious one-sided anti-Semitism by these university administrators against the Palestinian Semites, the other anti-Semitism, as I mentioned.
I recall Edward Said telling me, for some American Jews and Christian evangelicals, Israel was a place that they simply sent a check to. Knowledge about realities on the ground is limited or non-existent. Again, why is that?
Well, the evangelicals have this ecclesiastical doctrine of an apocalypse, and in the end, the Jews are required either to join up or they get slaughtered. But Netanyahu knows that's just nonsense in any empirical sense, but he uses the evangelical clout over the Republican Party to the hilt. And part of the reason the Republican Party is so adamantly pro-Netanyahu is because back home they have all these evangelical churches demanding it. And they're part of the Israeli lobby, too. Let's not forget that.
You're listening to Ralph Nader. It's in the hands of the people. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977. Again, 1-800-444-1977. Or online, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. You're a lawyer. Talk about the rule of law and why it's so important. No one is above the law, we are told. On July 1st, the Supreme Court, in an historically astonishing judgment by any measure, ruled that presidents have virtual immunity from prosecution. After the election, special counsel Jack Smith dropped two federal cases against Trump. But in New York, things are different. Letitia James, the attorney general of that state, refused to drop the civil fraud case against Trump. What are your views on what's been happening around these legal issues and Trump?
Well, it's the collapse of the rule of law, and Trump is above the law, and so as Biden is violating six federal statutes that condition shipment of weapons to foreign countries, in the case of Israel, the Leahy human rights provision, for example, they all violate the laws. Trump is more blatant about it and probably violates far more laws and provisions of the Constitution. The presidency has become more and more a monarchy. The Supreme Court, as you alluded to in July, issued a coup d'etat, in effect. They repudiated our founders' insistence that the White House and the presidency be accountable to the Congress when initiating war, for example, appropriating money, for example, confirming presidential nominees for cabinet offices and other positions, for example. And Trump indicates contempt for all of that. And Biden wasn't that far behind. And